Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. We're going to be with you for 2 hours tonight. And tonight, during the first hour, we're going to be doing a review of CSUN. That's right, and let's go ahead and bring in our panel of experts as well as my co-host, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl. How are you doing?
Very good. Wonderful. Having a great evening. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to introduce Jamal Masri, Mika Paikala, and Pratik Patel.
All right, great. And let's see. Why don't we give everybody contact information, and then we'll dive right in.
All right. Be glad to do that. We're up and running with MSN Windows Live Messenger. You can reach us at mainmenu@acbradio.org. Once again, that's mainmenu@acbradio.org. You may send an email to that same address if you wish, and we'll attempt to get your questions on the air this evening. You can also call us. The phones are not open yet, but they will be open after a while, maybe 10, 15 minutes after everybody's had a chance to give us their initial impressions of CSUN 2008. The phones will be available by calling 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333. And finally, don't forget to watch us on Twitter. The Twitter address for Main Menu is twitter.com/mainmenu. That's twitter.com/mainmenu.
Excellent, excellent. All right. Well, let's warmly welcome our guest tonight. And Jamal's been here before. Good evening, Jamal. How you doing?
Hi, Jeff.
And besides talking CSUN, we would like to actually talk with you tonight a little bit about a new website that you started, if you wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit later.
Sure.
Okay, great. And let's see, Mika, welcome aboard. You've been here before too. How you doing?
I have, Jeff. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing quite well. And let's see, Pratik, and you and I are working on a community together. And welcome aboard to Main Menu.
Thank you very much, Jeff and Daryl. Thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
That mic sounds a lot better, by the way. Very good. Okay. Well, let's see. Now, it's been a little while, so this is kind of good that we're doing it now because we can kind of see the fallout from CSUN. And why don't we get your guys' first impressions about what you thought the highlights were for CSUN this year? And keeping in mind that we've already played quite a bit of content from the CSUN conference here on Main Menu Live, but let's get your opinions on what you thought the highlights were for CSUN this year. And Mika, you want to start?
Sure. Just to give you some perspective, I know everybody has a little different perspective, kind of depending on if you've been before and how many times you've been. I've attended CSUN since about 2000, so I've been going for quite a while. And one immediate difference that you might have covered is that CSUN was at the Marriott and the Renaissance, and they stopped using the Hilton after many, many years. And some parts of it were a little disorganized more than usual. For instance, all the lab computers had only the 45-minute version of JAWS. But, I mean, that all being said, it was still a good conference and, as always, a sort of a learning and networking opportunity. Many of the products coming out we had heard about or had been kind of in the offing, such as the KNFB reader and the AT&T offering for mobile speak for $89 and the new firmware coming out for the Victor Stream. But a new product that I heard about right on the show floor was the Trekker Breeze, the GPS system from Humanware, And I actually first heard about it just kind of talking to people out on the floor before I saw it or talked to the HumanWare people at the booth. And initially the feedback I got was kind of negative because it didn't have all the features of the full Trekker. But when I went to see it, I actually liked that it was in one box and that you didn't have issues with Bluetooth pairing and things like that. It definitely doesn't have all the features of the Trekker, but on the same sense, it's nice that it's one nice little compact box. And then finally, IRTI announced a prototype of a new digital recorder that's supposed to come out in September. And I didn't actually see that, but I heard about it.
Oh, wow. We haven't even heard about that. That's interesting.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, that's, I believe, actually, if you go to TNT Consultancy's blog, which I can send you the link, Brian Hargen actually interviews a lady and a gentleman from IRTI about their podcast. I was just recently listening to that, although someone mentioned it one night at the show. But,
now is that from IRTI or is that the people?
The Plex Store.
The Plex Store.
Yeah, it sounds like it's being manufactured by the same people as Plex Store, but IRTI will probably distribute it here in the States.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I heard that interview. I thought maybe you were talking about another recorder, which would not surprise me one bit, actually.
Right. And then, of course, you had the an enhanced version of the JTunes scripts that provide accessibility to iTunes. And kind of some innovative work that Jim Fruchterman, and he was the keynote speaker, which that was kind of interesting. It was also interesting in his speech how he said that the venture capitalists weren't really that impressed or really didn't want to continue with making a reader for the blind. So that was kind of interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and he got up there and said accessibility is a right, which I'm all over that, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Saratech's really been in that space and the whole the digital lifestyle initiative they have. And Freedom Scientific had a whole sort of pavilion and area within the Hilton kind of on their own where they had a number of sessions, and they seemed to be really pushing MAGIC, the screen enlargement program, and they were offering a demo CD that would run through August rather than the typical 45-minute demo.
Right, and that's available for download on their website as well.
Right.
Okay, interesting. Now, did you see anything, you know, that was sort of a theme or ongoing thing that you thought was, you know, kind of interesting throughout the conference or anything?
There's been some talk about ARIA support, a little bit of discussion about support within Internet Explorer 8 and Firefox 3, so kind of continuing with the evolution of the web. And then just some of these newer companies or initiatives coming out, such as the one through Saratech, and that was kind of interesting.
Cool. Okay. All right. Well, how about you, Pratik? What did you find at CSUN, and any specific themes or anything that caught your eye?
Sure. Like Mika mentioned, I think one of the large themes this year at CSUN was web access. Different than last year, there was at least looking at the sessions, I noticed that there was a very heavy focus on web, especially ARIA, or the Web 2.0 standards from the World Wide Web Consortium, the accessibility standards. There were quite a few presentations on that, how to make websites accessible. And unlike last few CSUNs, I've actually been attending CSUN since 2001, so quite a few years as well. And there used to be a lot of, or at least quite a few sessions on on research, what's been happening in terms of just looking at new products during the sessions. And this year I noticed that there wasn't as much of a focus on research, but more of a practical application type of focus. There were a couple of small sessions on research. A couple of people from Japan presented. Also, I noticed that there wasn't as much of a focus on vendors, especially when it came to sessions. For example, Freedom Scientific only had one session during the sessions themselves. What a lot of the vendors ended up doing was that they had side sessions. They reserved rooms either at the Marriott or even at Hilton, in the case of CSUN, to do sessions, training sessions for free, or going a lot more in depth than they would do at sessions. GW Micro had quite a few sessions. They have for the past few years, and they continued that this year. Freedom Scientific added to that. And there were a couple of others too. Microsoft had a large presence in the Hilton. And it turned out to be quite interesting because even though the Hilton wasn't used officially, the Hilton did have a large role to play. The room at the Renaissance wasn't as large as the Hilton, so a lot of vendors had to move to the Hilton, and it was, it looks like they did it on their own initiative. In terms of the products, I think, as Mika mentioned, quite a few. The Breeze was really, really popular. Every time I went by the booth, there seemed to be a large crowd. At least the times that I went by. In terms of the market, I think what HumanWare is trying to do is to really address the need for simplicity. Trekker and other GPS devices or software that we end up using, either with the Braille Note or the PacMate, are in many ways are a little complicated. So they're trying to address, in my mind at least, they're trying to address the market where not a lot of people, where people don't have the technical skills needed to operate these software or devices. It's one package where the prices for that market a little lower than what it would be for a typical product. So I believe they said $899. So that was popular. Also, the stream was really popular. I think this is probably the largest show that the stream has been to. ATIA in January was one of them, but since it was released in September, this is one of the largest shows, and it did really well. The Icon and the Braille Plus from Level Star and APH, which are, if the listeners don't know, are the same, pretty much the same product, with one major difference. The Braille Plus has Braille keys along with their usual keys that the Icon has, but these are what the companies are calling mobile managers, 30 gig hard drive and based on Linux, and people can find out a lot more about that on their sites, but they announced, at least Level Star announced, that there will be a docking station for the Icon, and that booth also seemed to be really popular. A docking station, a QWERTY docking station, where the Icon can be docked to the station with extended battery life and additional speakers, etc. So there are quite a few products. And also I spoke with, I had a chance to speak with Plextor, the sales manager for Plextor, and it aims, the product that will be released sometime in September, at the August-September date, what they're saying is that product will be, at least I see it as a competitor to the Stream, in a similar price range, a lot thinner than the Stream, actually probably about the half of the width of the Stream, but with less battery life, at least for now. What they're showing us as prototype device will be a lot less. So that's what I can tell you. I'm sure there were other things, and things will come up in our conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, that's great. Okay. And now, Jamal, I know from hearing from you in other places that you were ill part of the time at CSUN, so that was sort of curtailing. But how about your CSUN experience? And congratulations on your presentation there, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I had really bad luck in terms of the flu. Like the day after I arrived, I came down with the flu, and I spent much of the time in bed in my hotel room. So I didn't get to go to nearly as many sessions as I had originally intended. So I can't give you as many kind of direct experiences, but I can still give you some impressions. One, unfortunately, that comes to mind off the bat is a negative one. I thought the conference was poorly organized compared to previous years, at least from a blindness perspective. To start off with, and this is not personal, I don't know even who the head of the conference organizing committee is, let alone who else is involved. So I'm just talking about performance here. From the beginning, I had the impression that more proposals were being turned down for blindness and low vision related events than in the past. And I don't know why. I'm wondering if part of it had to do with the changing of hotels. And then at the event itself, as Mecca has also alluded, there were significant problems with the level of access that we would be most concerned about. In the past, there had been a dedicated computer lab room that you could go to anytime. I think it was sponsored by AOL, at least the last time I went. I tended to go every couple of years. But it was great. There were all these computers. You could usually get one. They had, you know, fully functioning versions of your different screen readers. Well, this year there was no dedicated lab room. There was a desk with some laptop computers at one end of the hallway where there were also the registration tables. And typically you had to wait in line, often a significant wait before you could get to use one of these laptops. There was very little guidance, at least from a blindness perspective, as to what computer did what. I remember one person saying, oh, certain ones are just for checking mail, but other ones are for reserving seats in the conference rooms. I'll get to that in a second. Then I later learned that, and somebody else said, oh, only certain ones have screen readers on. But eventually I concluded that they did all have JAWS and Window Eyes on, and they did all have complete internet access. It's just this information was not clear. However, it was a time-limited version of JAWS, and it's not that's that big a deal, because you can, you know, restart the computer, but it kind of gives you the impression of second-class citizenship when, as soon as you load JAWS, you're getting this dialogue asking you to, authorize your version of JAWS. And also, I personally am not nearly as comfortable with a laptop keyboard as a desktop keyboard. So I found, just even when I finally got to use a computer, just much less efficient. Then there was the issue of because they weren't using the Hilton, it seemed like they were trying to cram more into the Marriott, and so they tended to divide up rooms more. A lot of these rooms, like, have two city names, like Atlanta, Boston, or whatever. And I guess you can either have it open as a whole thing or divide it up into smaller rooms. And it seemed like they were doing the smaller rooms, and typically there were overflow crowds for the blindness events and people out in the hallway. And you had to try to reserve a seat in advance if you could, you know, if you either had access to that system from your hotel room or you could finally get to use one of the laptops there that were public. So that was kind of disconcerting because CSUN is an expensive conference. I was a speaker this year, but even so, it was like about $400 registration fee. And I think that this really raises a question as to how responsive CSUN is right now to the needs of blind and visually impaired people. And I think the fact that a lot of the companies were kind of doing their own sideshows on the side, like at the Hilton, suggests, you know, the companies as well as individual attendees were dissatisfied. And it seems to me it sure would be nice if we could find a way that we could have these kind of intense technology sessions like CSUN offers. You know, at the National ACB or NFB conventions, you get a few, but they're kind of sparse throughout the week. You don't get these intense sessions like you can at CSUN, and where everything's just focused on technology. And so, you know, that's really great, both from the presentations and the networking. But a whole lot more blind people would really benefit from it, too, if the registration fee could be a lot more reasonable. And it makes me wonder, what can we do as a blind community to make this available to more people and to serve our needs better? Now, maybe this was just bad luck and an anomaly this year, because I understand there were some labor issues at the Hilton, and that's why the CSUN conference didn't want to use the Hilton. I don't know if that'll be true next year. But it seemed to be go beyond just the Hilton. There seemed to be just less responsiveness to our needs. And it makes me wonder, if we can't get CSUN to be more responsive, then how else as a blind community can we create a space where we can have these really intense technology sessions where everybody's sharing with one another at a reasonable price so that a lot more people can participate?
Well, one idea, I'll just toss an idea in and put it back to Jeff, but Jamal, how about an open letter from, maybe the three of you or, you know, others who are blind who have been to CSUN, come up with an open letter and send it off to the directors over at CSUN that put the conference together. And, it's an offer, but I'll make it publicly available on blindaccessjournal.com as well.
And it just to add, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I think this is not only blindness related in many ways. I've noticed this as a trend with the CSUN management for the last few years, and many vendors have been feeling that they've been disenfranchised by the CSUN administration. There was a major change, almost an overhaul of the CSUN management staff a couple of years ago, and since then, at least my feeling has been that the conference has been really badly organized.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, and I really have the sense that, you know, the vendors would be happy to do all kinds of presentations free for us, training sessions free for us, as they were kind of doing on the side. But you often have to, because they couldn't publicize through the formal channels, because it wasn't kind of an officially sanctioned thing, you didn't necessarily hear about it. So, Yeah, I'm all for communicating with the CSUN staff, but I also think it's worth raising the idea, like, as a blind community, because the reality is, yes, there are some crossovers, but we tend to have fairly different needs than, say, someone who's deaf or someone who has severe manual impairments and can't use a regular keyboard. So we tend to want to go to the blindness / low vision related sessions. And so if this conference isn't doing it for us, is there some other venue that we can create in the blind community that does do it for us?
The other thing I thought was kind of disconcerting was, you know, even if they are having some sort of major problem, you know, whatever it might be, they were not at all sort of transparent about it in either as a participant at the conference or the emails that they sent out in advance, or, you know, they don't really have a blog per se. And, you know, if you have a problem, they should have just been more open and upfront and frank about it. And I don't think they even kind of discussed any of these logistical issues or made a statement about them.
It would be interesting to know the composition of the center where, you know, where these conferences are planned. You know, is it mostly people with disabilities? Is it mostly people without disabilities? And even if it is mostly people with disabilities, you know, what is the composition of that team? And I think that might be part of the issue potentially as well, at least with the access concerns.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
At the risk of belaboring this, there were clearly some training issues too with the staff there, which, you know, surprises me. Like when I was first trying to register, I was directed to a computer that was supposed to be accessible simply because it was a quote accessible keyboard, and the person seemed to be not understanding that I also need a way of accessing what's on the screen. And then another time I remember I was trying to hurry to a session, and this staff person said, "Excuse me, sir, slow down, you're going to hit a table." Well, I knew where I was going, but I find that quite discourteous.
Yep.
And quite misunderstanding of how a blind person travels, because sometimes you do knock something with your cane as your way of finding out which way to go. But it's not really treating me like an adult for somebody to be saying, "Excuse me, sir, you're going to run into something. Slow down.
Indeed. Well, now according to the TNT Consultancy blog and podcast, one of the big key things that was going on at CSUN this year was scripting. Of course, we know JAWS for Windows has had it for a long time, you know, back in their DOS product and now in their Windows product. But a number of companies have talked and are, or either have introduced or will be introducing scripting within their screen readers. Did any of you get a chance to go watch any of those presentations, or did you get any chance to find out information
Sure.
about that?
I can tell you. I actually had the opportunity to speak with both GW Micro and Dolphin. I attended one of the private sessions that GW Micro had that gave you some more advanced information on what the scripting capabilities for WindowEyes will be. And, you know, before I say this, I think we have to acknowledge Freedom Scientific and its work in early work for, you know, creating the scripting language.
Absolutely.
There wasn't the accessibility when they created scripting language, the kind of accessibility that we have with the COM objects and Microsoft being as responsive. But now that is available, both the companies, Dolphin and GW Micro, are taking advantage of the some of the advanced capabilities available in Windows, and they're making scripting available, especially in the case of WindowEyes, that exclusively relies on COM objects. And it's a very sleek and sophisticated way of scripting. And you know, I think as I've dabbled in scripting with JAWS personally in many ways, but have found it a little awkward. But I think with WindowEyes' model, and I don't personally use Dolphin, but that one also seems to be a fairly doable scripting model.
Yeah. Now they're using a specific language. I think it's
Lua.
Lua, right? Yeah. Whereas WindowEyes is language independent. You can pick.
Language agnostic.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And which is really great, and of course not to forget that AI Squared has also announced scripting in ZoomText.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And which is also COM based.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I find it a little interesting with a lot of the enlargement products, scripting capabilities. I can sort of understand the scripting capabilities with JAWS and Magic, where those two products interact a lot, and the scripting model. But at the same time, at least with the users that I've worked with, my main work is in higher education, and a lot of students come in needing enlargement products. What we end up finding is that most students are only looking for the simplest way of enlarging things, and not getting into the very heavy, detailed type of enlargement that's available. And there are always exceptions, but enlargement, it seems to be fairly simple. So that feature is not as important, at least from my perspective, for a lot of students or a lot of people who have low vision.
Yeah, very interesting. Now let's see, Mika or Jamal. Now Jamal, I know you know quite a bit about the WindowEyes scripting as well as myself. Did you get a chance to look at either Dolphin or AI Squared's scripting model or anything? Either Mika or Jamal.
I didn't. I did hear a recording that had been done of the CSUN presentation by Dolphin on their scripting. And then I followed up by going to their website and trying to find documentation on what the scripting capability was. And I could find nothing on the Dolphin website. So it sounds like it's really in the early stages for Dolphin. But you're absolutely right that I think this was a noteworthy trend, that now these other screen readers are feeling that it's time for them to add scripting capability. In a way, it's kind of ironic because, as you know, supposedly Windows has been getting more natively accessible to us, at least that was Microsoft's commitment years ago. So if that were true, there would be less of a need for custom scripting because things would just tend to work with the default settings of your screen reader. But, of course, we know that that's unfortunately not the case, and scripting can often be a helpful way of enabling access that would not otherwise be there.
Okay, yeah, interesting. And Mika?
Yeah, I really, other than kind of briefly reading about the scripting that GW Micro and AI Squared and Dolphin were going to offer, I didn't really get into them in depth. I was a little bit busier this year because I was involved in two presentations myself for the first time. So I didn't get to as many sessions as I might ordinarily as well.
Oh, interesting. So I knew you were involved with Jamal's presentation. What was the other one?
The other one was on blogging, podcasting, and
using social media tools. That's right.
That was a good presentation, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's still up at blv1016.wordpress.com. And a quick story about that.
1016?
lv.wordpress.com.
LV, okay.
That number, incidentally, was the session number. That's where right. that came from. But WordPress has a dashboard where you can see who links to your blog, or in this case, blog and presentation. And I found the Geek News Central podcast had actually covered it. And the way I found out about it was through the WordPress dashboard, which was kind of interesting. And then I also found another blog covering CSUN through the WordPress dashboard, somebody that had linked to that presentation.
Sure.
Yeah, very cool.
One of the technologies that I forgot to talk about, and it was probably because they were this the vendor was not on the floor. It didn't have a booth, but was showing his product on the side. Was a gentleman from Italy,
Marco,
and Marco Brignan, and he was showing a product that's comparable and, in my opinion, a little better than the KNFB reader. Although it's not on a cell phone, it runs off a ultra mobile PC that uses a digital camera to take images of either pages and to do recognition similar to what the KNFB reader could do, but it uses off-the-shelf technology with a custom interface like OmniPage and FindReader. But in addition, what was interesting about this product is that it has features that can help you recognize labels of bottles or cans or square objects or rectangular boxes, so that you can read information from, you know, let's say a Snapple bottle or a Coke, or box of prescriptions. And that was a fascinating product, and you know, there are quite a few features that the product has.
Do you know if that's out, Pratik, or what the name of it is?
It's called C-Recognizer, C-Recognizer. It's out in the European market. It's not out in the U.S. yet.
Okay.
It should be, though.
Yeah, that should be really interesting to see how they competitively, you know, price that.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting comment that I heard recently was an interview with Mike Calvo, and he was talking about the new Windows Vista Aero interface and how by default typical screen readers disable Aero, but he's thinking that as Windows Vista and hardware evolves, that certain software will be written such that it requires you to use Aero.
Well, that all gets into the video intercept issue, doesn't it?
What is Aero? I'm not familiar with that.
It's basically a visual scheme within Windows Vista, but from what he was alluding to, it may be more than just a visual scheme or eye candy, as he called it. Jeff, do you know any more about it, of what exactly it is? Or
it's basically a higher end presentation mode for Windows, and it provides basically eye candy. A lot of PCs that people buy today, and definitely a lot of legacy hardware, is not going to be Aero compliant, and therefore it falls back to, you know, more the native look. But yeah, that's interesting. But I really think that Microsoft will. I mean, I have no way of knowing this, but I mean, I would think that Microsoft, both legally and responsibly, would have to provide some way of maintaining access to Windows for AT vendors.
Right.
Okay, good. So now I wanted to focus a little bit on ARIA. There's been some announcements from Microsoft in reference to Internet Explorer 8.0 adding support for ARIA. Have any of you played with IE8 and
Do you have any comment on, now keeping in mind, of course, that IE8 is beta, so the things that we talk about here are, I mean, that's subject to change without notice, you know. So have any of you seen ARIA in action in IE8, or any AT vendors supporting that, or did you see any of that at CSUN?
Sure. I've been playing with ARIA with Firefox and the beta version of IE8. A couple of things to say about IE8 especially. Not only is it in beta, but the beta 1 is specifically aimed towards developers. It's not a consumer market. And the assistive technology support as a consequence is very limited. So what you may find with as far as ARIA support is limited, especially because the functionality for screen readers is not yet there. It's not matched. So there's some functionality, but not complete. And ARIA as a specification is not complete. It's in draft form. So whatever the support that we'll see from either Firefox or from Microsoft, it will be limited, necessarily limited. So, but Firefox seems to be doing a lot more with ARIA than IE8 so far, at least as far as I can tell. I've had much more of a chance to play with ARIA on Firefox 3D with JAWS and Window Eyes, and both of them work quite well, actually, with some of the very specific things.
Great. All right, let's open up the phone lines and get your calls tonight. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. We already had one caller attempt to call in from area code 515, so if you want to try again, that would be fine. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Jamal, before time gets away from us, I definitely wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about a new venture that you've started on the web. You want to let us know what that's all about?
Sure. I started a website called nonvisualdevelopment.org, and its slogan is software development without visual dependencies. The purpose is to promote basically development with any kind of computer language through means that don't require sight. Now, the end products are likely to be accessible products because we have an interest in making things that are accessible, but they, you know, may also be for the general market. So the site is focused more on the development process, not necessarily making products that target the blind market, but making the process of software development accessible to us. And so I've collected all documentation on a lot of languages, tutorials. I have a page with all of the open source projects I've done.
Oh, good.
I've tried to link to every site that I thought had a similar intent or could be a useful resource to somebody doing development. And it's easy to just say that it's programming, and for the most part, it's programming. But I'm being careful about that term too, because a lot of people want to do development in languages that aren't normally considered programming languages, such as HTML, developing websites. And my site is fully interested in supporting that as well.
Okay, great. And just to get people to so that their pens are ready, you want to give that to a website again for us?
Sure. It's nonvisualdevelopment.org.
Okay, nonvisual development. Kind of long, but probably easy to remember once you go there a few times. Great. We have a caller.
Right.
We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in here. Just 1 second. Hello, Danny, and welcome to Main Menu Live, sir.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Very quick questions, and then I will hang up and listen to the answer.
Okay.
First, there, Marlena was talking to someone this weekend, and a product was mentioned, but I cannot find anything as to where to get it or what it is. It's called the Web for All. Second, was there anything at CSUN about making Windows truly easy to install for somebody that's blind? Let's say if your hard drive goes bye-bye. And let's see, the third thing was... Those are the two main things, and I've thought of writing a web page one day, but I think that writing it out, I tried learning HTML, but learning it, trying to write it out in Notepad or something like that is very laborious. Is there a better way? I'll hang up and listen to your answers.
Okay, great. All right, so Web for All, did you guys see anything like that at CSUN?
May have been, I believe, and don't quote me on this, I believe he may have been referring to a product that's sold by IBM. I believe it's a server-based product, and yes, it's a server-based product that a company or an organization can install on a server. So it's not aimed at a consumer, but some organizations may buy it and install it. I don't know of any organizations that have installed it so far.
I have a resource at IBM we could check with on it. The term seems vaguely familiar, but I can't really pin down what it is. Or maybe
sure,
we can
check with Guido.
Right.
We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in.
Do you want to take his second question?
Yeah, let's get our caller in here for just 1 second. Beth, if you can just hold on a second, we're going to get these other two, and then we'll get you right on, all right?
Okay,
hold on 1 second. Okay, go ahead. We had two other questions from Danny.
So he was asking about Windows installation. I was actually planning to do a session on that, but they didn't accept that proposal. But there are ways that a blind person can install Windows essentially using a script file called winnt.cif under Windows XP.
Right.
And I believe Windows Vista uses an XML file. And a product you can use is Nlight, which I think you've used, Jeff, and I've used.
That thing's amazing. We could do a whole show on that.
Right. But... I have done this both personally and for work, so the gentleman could email me. I can give my email address later on, and then perhaps I can... It would take the whole 2 hours and then some probably to go through it exactly, but I could maybe help him on the side.
Okay, good.
And as far as the creating websites, that does bring up an interesting point, because many websites now are being done using content management systems. And Jamal and I were recently talking about systems such as Plone and Drupal and some others. And he actually went through an evaluation process. And I'm in the process of evaluating Drupal and some of the other systems as well. But, I mean, even... simpler than that would be using something like WordPress or Blogger to do a website without the need for programming. But again, there's a lot of resources, you know, available about these content management systems and even just blogging systems for doing websites.
It really all depends on what you're wanting to publish and how you want to get that message out there. Okay, let's bring Beth in. We're running out of time, folks. This hour has gone by quickly. Hello, Beth. We'll let you ask your question, and then we'll answer it off air, all right?
Yes, indeed. Hi, everybody. Just to know a couple of things, quickies. First of all, you were talking before about products for people who are not really technically inclined, and I didn't understand what products you were referring to, so if you could really quick just go over that one more time. And the other thing is the Icon versus the Braille Plus. I understand that on the Braille Plus, the non-Perkins keys are smooshed together more than they are on the Icon. And that is a subjective thing, I know, but if you could kind of speak to that, I would appreciate it. And, Jeff, I have one quickie for you, too.
Yep.
Sometimes when I call in, I get your answering machine, so could you please set us straight about that, and do you want us to leave messages? And I'm going to hang up, and thank you very much.
Okay, good. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. As far as the answering machine, yes. The 800 number rings into my house, so no, do not leave a message. Just hang up and retry again. Unfortunately, I can't afford. You know, we're all volunteers here, so I don't have the luxury of having a dedicated line just for Main Menu, which could go to a busy signal, which would be rather convenient, but I don't. So, let's see. Anyone have any comments on the Icon?
Actually, our local user group in Boston is going to have an extensive demonstration of that this weekend, which usually gets recorded, so you can go to www.vibug.org, and I'm sure that issue will get covered. I do know that the buttons on the Braille Plus, the conventional keypad buttons, are smaller, but I don't know that they're, you know, so small that it would be hard to use. I mean, I've certainly seen both units, and if you're a Braille user, that Braille keyboard gives you some functionality, and I think you still certainly can use the buttons. I don't think they're much smaller than, you know, on a cell phone, but they are somewhat smaller. I guess it would be a matter of personal preference.
Sure, of course.
They are certain somewhat smaller, but the ones that really matter, like all the function keys that you know, are the OK, the cancel, the menu, the application key, those are large enough that anyone can operate them. And you know, and I'm not speaking subjectively here. I think those are fairly large enough. The ones that are smaller and sort of squished together are the sort of the telephone style keys, but if you're going to be using the Braille Plus, you'll probably rely a lot more on the function on the Braille function keys than the telephone keypad.
Okay, good. All right, I think we have time for one more caller if someone wants to sneak in. 866-400-5333, 866-400-Jeff. And before we let you guys go, we definitely want to give you guys an opportunity to...
Hey, you just got props from Monica, by the way, Jamal. She says, I use two of his programs on a daily basis, and I'm... See, Jamal's a top-notch programmer.
Okay.
I use two of his programs daily and keep one of them open at all times.
Which one is she using, did she say?
She didn't say. She just tweeted it.
Ah, very nice. So. Yeah, it's. I think all of us are using.
If he can follow up, I am curious which one.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we'll take care of that. You need to get yourself a Twitter account, Jamal.
I do.
I'll help you set it up, Jamal.
He needs to get a Messenger account too. Daryl, why don't you go ahead and take it from here while I get this call?
Wonderful. All right, so let's go ahead and any last words, you guys, starting with Jamal this time.
Well. I think Beth had asked what we were referring to about things that for less technically inclined. I'm not sure, but she might have been referring to Petit's comment about Humanware trying to make friendlier devices than some of the
Oh, the Checker Breeze, for example.
Yeah.
Right. Which you can learn about Humanware.com.
One other trend I noticed, nothing profound about this, but just more integration of different services that are out there or different technologies. So, for example, mobile speak phones now being able to connect to Bookshare and
exactly.
Read Bookshare books. I recently heard that with the System Access Network, you can get described movies, which sounds kind of cool. So I think that's definitely another trend, and it's a very good one, that, you know, different organizations or technologies are trying to see how they can collaborate with what's out there.
Well, very good. All right. Well, why don't we let you guys give your contact information? We only have about 2 or 3 minutes here, and we definitely want to let you have that opportunity to do that. Jamal, you want to go first?
Sure. Probably the best way to reach me is my personal email address is empower@smart.net.
Okay. Okay. And just to
you can also go to my website and get information there.
Now, are you going to merge the empowerment zone somehow into the other site, or conform the two somehow, or anything, or are you going to leave them sort of separate?
I haven't decided.
Okay. Well, at least that website, empowermentzone.com, is a great resource for exercising screen readers' utilization of very large web pages.
That's true.
Indeed.
Okay. All right, Mika?
Okay, well, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Pykala, which is spelled PYYHKALA. My personal email address is Pykala, again, PYYHKALA@gmail.com. And I'm also on Skype under Pykala.
Okay, great. All right, and Pratik?
Sure. You can email me at Pratik, P-R-A-T-I-K, P1, @gmail.com. You can also reach me via Skype at Patel, P-A-T-E-L, .Pratik, P-R-A-T-I-K. You can also follow me via Twitter at www.twitter.com/ppatel, P-P-A-T-E-L. Or if you want to use my friend feed, you can also follow me via friend feed at www.friendfeed.com/ppatel. I also have a blog, but I won't go into it.
Oh, you can give your blog out if you wish.
Okay, it's www.ppatel.org/blog.
Okay, I didn't even know you were
the
blogging.
Website. Yeah.
So that's good to know.
No,
I'll add you to my RSS feed. There.
Exactly. I just found out about it recently myself.
Very interesting. Hey, real quick question. Have you done any work? I know, because you do quite a bit of work with higher ed, right? So universities and things. Have you done any work with Kuali?
No.
Okay.
But we can chat offline if you want.
Yeah, yeah. I was just curious from an accessibility standpoint if you knew much about that. For people interested in knowing, it's a system that's being developed across the United States and maybe even be international for universities and other organizations. And I know that you've done quite a bit of work in higher ed. So just wanted to see if you had known of its current accessibility state. But wait, I will take that offline. But I just wanted to see if you knew anything about that. So, okay, well, gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on tonight. We'll have to have you back. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Meanwhile, Daryl, we'll let you. We'll put you on mute here, and we'll let you go and go get
I'll
Dave
go grab
Williams,
Dave.
And we'll hear from Jamie Pauls from Access Watch, and he's going to talk about the new home for his blog, and all things RSS somehow related tonight. So let's listen to Jamie as he talks to us all about that.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls of Access Watch. The Access Watch blog has been moved to Blogger. I'm especially pleased at the ability to blog via email. This means that when new reviews are added to the Access Watch database, a new review alert will immediately appear on the blog. You can visit the blog at http://accesswatch.blogspot.com. Using your favorite RSS reader, You can subscribe to the blog by entering the following URL, http://feeds.feedburner.com/accesswatch. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jamie, very much. Appreciate that. And we'll hear from Jamie next week as he gives us more information. Let's find out if Daryl has been able to obtain our next guest.
We are all set. We have Dave Williams from Dolphin on the line with us.
All right. Hello, Dave. How you doing?
Mr. Bishop, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Ooh. And how the heck are you?
I'm doing great. And for those that this voice will seem very familiar to many of you, as it used to be the voice of Main Menu and ACB Radio director and all kinds of fun stuff. So, but of course now you have a
the
new
voice
a new
the thousand ships.
Yeah, that's right. And welcome back again. It's been a while, and unfortunately we didn't get to see you at CSUN since we weren't there this year. But how was your CSUN first of all?
Yes, it was fantastic, and sorry you weren't there, because we had a very nice drink and catch up last year in 2007
We did indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's always a long trip for us, because I'm out of the UK, of course. So it's about an 11-hour flight from London to LA, and then of course you've got the 7 or 8 hour time difference, which is a little bit confused by the clocks going forward in the US earlier than Europe now. So that's always pretty interesting. But yeah, a really busy 3 days at CSUN. Lots of big announcements from Dolphin, lots of traffic at the booth, which we're really glad about, of course. And of course, as is always the case with these conferences, it's a great opportunity to network as well, and to meet colleagues from throughout the industry, and you know, and make plans for the future. So a really fruitful CSUN for Dolphin, I think.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get right into it and talk about all the new exciting things that you guys announced at CSUN. And I know there was quite a bit to hear about.
Absolutely. So we've got two major announcements, one on the access technology side of the house and one on the alt format side as well. So Dolphin, for those who, maybe it's been a while since you've been to yourdolphin.com, we essentially have two ranges of products: our access range, which are aimed at people who are blind, low vision, and so that includes our Supernova screen reader magnifier, the PAL screen reader, and the Lunar screen magnifier. Those are our access tools, essentially. And then our alt format range, so our range of tools for producing material in alternative formats, including DAISY, large print, and Braille. So those products include our Easy Range, Easy Producer, and Easy Converter, and Easy Reader. So we had two large announcements. The first one was that Dolphin have introduced version 9 of our access range. So that's version 9 of the HAL screen reader, Supernova screen reader magnifier, and the Lunar screen magnifier. And we'll talk about what's new with those in just a moment. And we've also introduced version 3 of Easy Converter. And Easy Converter, for those who don't know, is, I like to describe it as a Swiss Army knife of alt format production, and it's really aimed at institutions who really don't have a lot of time to think about you know, the individual tools that are often required for producing Braille, large print, DAISY, MP3, plain text, and so on. So you can take a range of input formats and produce a range of output formats. And a little bit later on, we'll talk about what's new in Easy Converter 3.0, which was also launched this year at the CSUN conference. So let's start then with the access range, and just let me come to my notes. Be gentle with me today, folks, because it is 3 a.m. here. So
I appreciate your ability to come on the show this early there in the UK, for sure.
Sure. So one of the things that I'm always really proud of with Dolphin software is that when we do a software release, we often release across multiple languages. So version 9 of HAL Supernova and Luna, is available in UK English, US English, Swedish, Dutch, French, Spanish, Finnish, Czech, Welsh, Croatian, Icelandic. So quite a lot of range languages right out of the box there, and in a couple of weeks there'll be additional languages added as those translations become available. So that's the entire UI and all the functionality of the product translated into each of those languages. So the biggest thing, I guess, in Supernova 9 is that we have completely re-engineered our Internet Explorer document object model support. So this improves responsiveness and stability, particularly on larger and more complex web pages. I heard you had the gentleman from Empowerment Zone on early on, and I certainly use that that page to go and benchmark the screen reader, see how it's doing, you know, loading up those large web pages. So one of the things when I became the blindness product manager at Dolphin was that I was very keen to see a huge performance improvement in our Internet Explorer 6 and 7 support. So that's now happened, and people are reporting the pages are getting into the virtual buffer much quicker, and that navigating around the pages is happening much quicker, and that the moving up and down the pages now, you're getting much more consistent feedback. So if perhaps you tried Dolphin software in the past and you'd found it to be wanting a little bit on certain web pages, I would urge you to drop along to the yourdolphin.com website and try version 9, because we have completely re-engineered that Internet Explorer support. Okay. We have also introduced in Internet Explorer the quick navigation keys, which of course have been around for a while in some of the other products, but we've taken a slightly different approach. So for example, in the Dolphin software, our default screen reader modifier is actually the caps lock key. That's the Dolphin key. You can change that if you want it to be the insert key, or in fact the scroll lock key. And you can use that in conjunction with the alphabetic keys on your keyboard to move to the next element. So for example, if you want to go to the next heading, use the Dolphin key in H. Now, you may ask the question, well, why not just say H? Well, that's all well and good, but then when you come to filling in a form and you're in the screen reader sort of live mode, you're out of the virtual mode of the screen reader, and you want to enter some text, well, of course, you enter letter H into an edit area, and of course, you get the character H. You don't go to the next heading. So nice thing about the Dolphin approach is that the one hotkey, Dolphin key in H, will take you to the next heading, irrespective of whether you're in the virtual mode or whether you're in the live mode.
So, very interesting implications there.
Yeah. So I think this is one thing I always say to people. You know, it's good that we have, you know, so much competition and choice around that we're able to take these different approaches. And you know, one of the things that does irk me about using some of the other products is when I'm filling in a form and think, actually, you know what, I just need to go check that bit of information real quick, or I want to get to the next button, or you know, I want to get back to the last element, and then I have to kind of turn on some mode, go back into virtual mode. So you just hit the key, I'd say H is the obvious example for heading, Dolphin key in H, and that will take you to the next heading, you know, regardless of which mode you happen to be in. I've got a list of the keys here. Let's see. Button, checkbox, different elements, edit area, graphic, heading, link, next block of text, and there's the whole list, of course, in the in the user guide, but all the common controls as you would expect, and visited and unvisited links are in there as well. Okay. So let me scroll down here, and we'll rip it through some of these new features. We have introduced some verbosity for the Windows clipboard. So when you're copying and pasting items from the Windows clipboard, not just items as in files and folders, but also text, the screen reader will tell you that has happened. We also have some error messages in there if for some reason it wasn't possible to cut the text. Say, for example, you're in a read-only area and you try to cut some text, then the screen reader will report that the cut operation didn't work and will return an error message. It doesn't, it's, you know, the screen reader is not just dumb. It doesn't just say cut, you know, just because you press Control X. It says cut if the text was actually cut or the items were actually cut from the original location. And similarly, if you try to paste into a destination, it will only say paste if you know, if something actually happened rather than, you know, just because you press Control V. And also for keyboard languages where the keys for those clipboard operations may be different, you can change those keys if necessary from the screen reader control panel. And a nice touch, again, a slightly different approach from Dolphin. If you select multiple files or folders in Windows Explorer and you copy those to the clipboard and you paste them, the screen reader will report the number of items. So, you know, for example, it might say, you know, 6 items copied to clipboard, or 6 items paste from clipboard as you select those items, or, you know, deselect those items. So I think that's a slightly different approach to that's already been taken.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay.
Sounds great. And
okay. So did you have a question there, Darrell?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, a little bit more about some big things like how are the version 9 of the Access products doing with Vista and with Office 2007, and are they doing anything with ARIA content yet? So on, issues like accessibility issues of that sort. I think it's kind of
Absolutely. So I'm just ripping through the new features in version 9.
And then we'll get to that.
We introduced version 8 last year.
I know some of them were addressed there too, but I don't know if they'd been enhanced or whatnot.
Well, there's a couple of Office 2007 enhancements I was going to get to Word.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll come to that. But just to reassure you, Darrell, that Vista and Office 2007 are fully supported, and support for those was introduced with version 8 last year. But we have kind of built on that with version 9. So. Okay. The list utility was something else that has come in with version 9. So we've long in Dolphin products been able to list elements from the current document. So you've been able to press the Dolphin key in number 1, for example, to bring up a list of links, or you can get a list of headings, tables, controls, spelling errors, and all sorts of other elements with different hotkeys. And you know, I found it was a little bit like playing the piano. You know, you'd hit the Dolphin key and then you got this whole number row deal to try and remember which number to jump to each list. Well, those keys are still there, obviously, for legacy users, but if you hit the Dolphin key in tab, then those lists are now available in a multi-page dialogue from supported applications. So those include Internet Explorer, Microsoft Word, and Microsoft Excel. So Dolphin key in tab will bring up the list utility, and the first page gives you a summary, so you can see that how many headings, how many frames, how many how many of each element essentially exist. So you might be in Microsoft Word, for example, and you press Dolphin key in tab, and on the first page you're in a read-only list, and you can arrow down and you can see how many links there are and how many headings there are and how many spelling errors there are and so forth in your document. And then the subsequent pages of the multi-page dialogue will give you the individual list of those. But of course the legacy hotkeys, as I've just mentioned, are still available for people who are familiar with jumping straight to those individual lists.
That's really nice, because it allows you to really, you know, get at all the information in one, you know, dialogue, and, you know, using a really standard look and feel that people are used to.
Absolutely, and you can use Control Tab and Control Shift Tab, and then each of those lists then can be sorted either in the order that those elements appear in the document, or you can also sort those elements alphabetically, or you can reverse the order, and there are all sorts of operations that you can perform: right click, left click, root the focus, and so on.
Now these lists, I haven't seen it obviously, but the list views, are you using list views in those, or are you using just a standard list box? And if you're using list views, do they conform to, you know, the Vista style list views where, you know, you can tab and get to the information, additional information of a list view.
Right. So as I understand it, it's a multi-page dialog, and each of the tabs contains a separate list. So you use Control Tab, Control Shift Tab to navigate
right.
to those.
Right.
And then once you're on the tab, then the first item in the list gains the focus, and then you can use first letter navigation if you want to jump to a subsequent item in the list. So say you had a page with, say you're on the empowerment zone, for example, and you knew there was a link beginning with a particular letter and you wanted to jump straight to that, you could hit that. And then pressing the tab key then will take you out of the list and will take the focus to a combo box, which will let you change the way in which the list is sorted, and then the subsequent presses of the tab will take you to the buttons, which of course have accelerator keys associated with those if you need to perform an operation on the item that you've selected in the list.
Right, like moving to it or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right-click, left-click, yep. You know, move the virtual focus there, you know, whichever action it is you need to do.
Absolutely. Okay, great.
Okay. Just bear with me 1 second. I'm just scrolling down here. Okay. I've got a bunch of examples in my notes. I guess you needed those, but... Okay. So in Microsoft Word, then... So actually across all the Office 2007 applications, we've improved the performance on the ribbon. Actually, we've improved performance in the document area itself, so you should see greater responsiveness compared with 8.03. On the ribbon itself, as you move between the different group boxes, they should now be identified by the screen reader as you move between the different group boxes within the ribbon. In addition to that, the additional focus hotkey, left shift and numpad 0 will read the super tooltip information that's associated with each item on the ribbon. So for example, some users may not be aware of this, that in Office 2007 each of the items on the ribbon has quite an extensive tooltip associated with it, which appears when you position the mouse over the item when you're not running a screen reader. So users of the Dolphin screen reader and Screen Reader Magnifier, HAL and Supernova are able to retrieve this information. It can be read automatically if using a high verbosity scheme, or if you're not using a high verbosity scheme, then pressing the additional focus hotkey, that shift and numpad 0, will read the additional tooltip information. So for example, if you've got copy focused on the ribbon, pressing that key will say something like copies the selected text to the clipboard, that sort of information. So it's giving you a little bit of help information. And as I say, the default verbosity scheme is a high verbosity scheme, so that's on by default. But then more experienced users will change their verbosity scheme because obviously, you know, you don't need all that extra verbiage. But you may want to, if there's an item on the ribbon that you're a little bit unclear about what it is, what it does, then you can use the hotkey left shift numpad 0 to retrieve the super tooltip information. And we've had some fairly positive feedback about that as well. So pretty pleased about that. We've got some new Braille tables in version 9. Let's see. This is just really to kind of, you know, reiterate Dolphin's commitment to Braille. Braille's always been, you know, a core part of the screen reader, not just Braille output, but also literary grade 2 Braille input. So if you have a Braille display that has input keys, so something like... the Alva BC640 with the feature pack, or the HumanWare Brilliant Connect Braille display with the input keys, then your Dolphin software will back translate into text as you Braille grade 2 into your Windows applications. That's something that's been around for a little while. And just as a side note, really pleased this week to hear on ACB Radio the coverage of the ICEB conference from Australia. I think that's, you know, one of the sorts of things that ACB Radio does best, is bringing those sorts of conferences to people, and really, really glad to hear those this week. So the following tables then have been added in the version 9 range of Supernova. So we've got... we've got various French codes, including a code for people who are students of the French language. One of the things I didn't know, and maybe you knew this, Jeff, I don't know, that when you're studying a language, you make and you're learning, say, French Braille, as a native kind of English speaker, you may not actually be using the same Braille code as somebody in France would. There are different codes for students of the French language as opposed to French people who actually live in France.
Wow, that's interesting.
That sounds confusing.
That's really confusing.
It's very confusing. So what we've tried to do is to include those codes so that students who are studying French and Spanish and some of these other languages, that they've got, you know, you've got the native language code, but you've also got the code that you would use if you were a student of those languages, if you're an English student of those languages.
I think the only I think the only experience I ever had with foreign Braille was on an aircraft when I was flying American Airlines. They handed me this book, and it was huge. You know how they give you a Braille book that talks about the safety features of the aircraft?
Oh yeah,
never gotten one of those.
This this thing was huge. It was probably the size of a phone book in a giant binder. And it had 20 or 30 languages in it in Braille, and I was so fascinated by it. I told them, I want to keep it. I want to look at it throughout the flight. And I, it was fascinating to look at that. As you could, you know, you could read the obviously the information was the same in each language. And
yeah, I know some of the big airlines, they have the they have Braille safety cards, and if they don't, they should have. So Darryl, yep. I would be asking for it if they're not offering you Braille.
Yeah, I've never seen that before on another airline except that one book, and it was huge. It was remember those World Book Encyclopedias, Darryl? Those big volumes.
I remember at ASDB, huge volumes.
Yeah, they were about that.
Of them or something.
There was 140.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, it was about that size. It was just gigantic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, and just as an aside, last September I visited a distillery on a small Scottish island, and it was the tiniest plane. It was a little twin prop job, you know, it was a propeller thing, and we took off, and I mean, you couldn't have a conversation on this thing, you know. It was so, the engine was so loud and vibrating all over the place.
Right.
But you know, they brought me this this immaculate production, this Braille production with all the safety instructions.
That's
and
amazing.
You know, I turned to the back of this thing, and they also had a Minolta diagram of the aircraft.
Yeah,
tactile diagram showing where the and where the, you know, I've just never experienced anything like it. This was the tiniest little plane, you know. So, I think airlines have a kind of almost a duty of care, really, to ensure that that information is available in the format that you need. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get on to sort of an easy converter. But yeah, so we've got German, and we've got French, we've got Norwegian, we've got Spanish. So these are updated tables, and some of these are for English students of those languages. Talking about the conference on English Braille this week, we've got the UEBC code, Unified English Braille Code, is now included in Supernova and the HAL. Let's see. And that's not just for output, of course. As I already mentioned, you're able to do Braille input with supported devices in the Dolphin Access range. It's worth mentioning, I know you guys in the US, you know, it's almost ironic, actually, because I believe it was the US that kind of started the UE, you know, the Unified English Braille Code initiative, and now, you know, are not kind of choosing to sort of carry on with that. But certainly UEBC is being adopted in South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada are looking at it quite seriously, and Algeria and the UK are considering it as well. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about UEBC as time goes on.
Yep.
Okay, so back on Word, what I missed actually when I was talking about Word, we nailed some, there were some issues with selecting text in tables and how that information was represented on the Braille display. So we've nailed some of that stuff. There was also an issue, there was a regression in 803 with terminal services. We're now supporting that again, so you're able to use the thin client support in version 9. You should talk to us about that if you're operating in that kind of environment and you do need to use Citrix, and that's something that you know that is included with the product. You don't need to purchase you know any kind of add-on or anything like that if you want to use Citrix.
Great. We might talk about that offline, but it would be interesting to find out about installing these this product on servers and things of that sort, what the response.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And last, and by no means least, included in version 9.0.1 is a fully fledged scripting engine. And
yes.
Yeah, so we've come to the party as well.
Yeah, now how does yours work? Is it similar in that it's uses object-oriented languages like VBScript and JScript and all that?
No, you're using Lua, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're using Lua, which is an open-source scripting language. So neat thing about that is if we if we want to change the language in some way, or if there's something we don't like in the language, we can just contribute that change back to the community. So we haven't got another corporation that we've got to work with to implement changes to the language. Should say that happens very rarely because Lua is a mature language. It's been out there for over 15 years. It's a well respected language for adding and extending functionality to existing applications. It's very lightweight, which doesn't mean it's not powerful, but what it does mean is it's very low on memory usage and it's highly responsive. So we're really impressed with the performance of Lua. So what happened at CSUN was that we announced that version 9 users have the scripting engine in the product, but we haven't actually released it officially yet. A little bit complicated because we want to get all the documentation and some of the usability stuff absolutely nailed before we make that visible in the UI. But some of the functionality that I've already talked about, some of the new features I've talked about in version 9, for example, that stuff on the ribbon, for example, is achieved with Lua scripts in the background. And as soon as we finished up some of these usability things, then absolutely it's going to be there in the UI and everybody's going to be able to use it.
Well, that's great. So now you're using Lua and some of your other products too, right?
Yeah, so Lua is right across the range. So it's not just in the HAL screen reader. It's also in the Supernova screen reader magnifier, which is still, as far as I'm aware, the only sort of really viable, popular solution that's providing speech, braille, and magnification in a single product. So you're able to write a script that will work with all the range. So you're able to write a script that will work with Supernova, and then the braille and speech functionality of that will work with HAL, and the magnification part of your script will work with Luna.
Okay, great, yeah.
Okay.
So now, do you are you adding extensions to Lua? Or are you going to have? You may not know. I don't know. You personally haven't done any programming in Lua, have you?
A little bit. Yeah. I've I've been on the course. I wouldn't call myself a programmer. My main concern is that from a blindness perspective, it's fully usable. So obviously we've got hundreds of screen reader and screen magnifier functions that are obviously specific to our product. We've also included, I think it's the Lua Plus extension, because our screen reader is fully Unicode. And so there's a function in Lua Plus where you can use, I think it's L before you open the quotes for a string, which ensures that the string is converted to Unicode.
Okay, great. That's really exciting. It seems like everybody at CSUN was talking about scripting. It seemed to be the thing to come to the table with this year.
Yeah, it's the year of the script, and you know, I mean, the thing is, we're not saying that you know that this replaces mapping. We've still got the mapping system, so you're still able to go in and get a huge tree view of all the information that's detected by the screen reader, the Windows detector, the MSAA detector, the object detector. So you can still you still access all of that, and you can create rules. I often describe mapping, it's a bit like creating you know, the rules in your email client to filter your email. You get all this information coming in every day, and the only way to manage it is to filter it into separate folders and to sort it. And it's kind of what a Dolphin map does, really, is to provide a series of rules to filter all the information that we're able to get from Windows. So that system still exists. And sometimes it's quite useful to go into the training mode interface to get information about a control class name, and then you can use that information then to populate your script. The other thing that that's quite interesting is that you might write a function in your script, but you may find rather than writing the code to assign a hotkey, you know, to continue a couple of lines, but perhaps somebody wrote the function and they didn't assign a hotkey to it. You can do that in the mapping interface, and you can see a list of the functions, you know, in a pull down, you know, list box, and then you can assign, you know, hotkeys to those if you so choose. So I think the mapping and scripting really, really complement each other.
Very nice.
The script is
Provide information.
Yeah, the script is able to provide information to the map, and the map is able to draw on functionality from the script.
Very powerful, very interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
all right, great.
And
so,
and, you know, the mapping was always designed as really as an interface for somebody who really wasn't into coding, because of course not everybody is, but the situations where, you know, there's a particular problem, you want to automate a particular process, you might want to use a script to do that, and, you know, and then use the rest of the mapping system to train, you know, the application to make it more accessible. So you got that kind of unique combination there.
Very good. Anything else new in version 9?
That's pretty much it. You know, there's the you know, sundry fixes and performance improvements. We have there's a special on at the moment that people are able to cross grade to the Dolphin Pen if you so choose. So the Dolphin Pen is a software installed on a USB thumb drive, so you can have the HAL screen reader or the Supernova screen reader magnifier or the Lunar magnifier on a USB thumb drive, and we're offering people an upgrade path for people who would want that option as opposed to a CD. So that's another possibility. But in terms of functionality, that's pretty much it in 9.01, and 9.02 is right around the corner, and watch this space.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Great.
Now Daryl asked you about ARIA and IE8 and that kind of thing. Are you able to talk to any of that at this point?
Not in any detail, apart from to say that, of course, we are looking at it in-house. You know, IE8 is still in beta, so, you know, most users aren't using IE8 yet. Initial tests are quite encouraging. You know, at the moment, it does work. I think there are some things that we want to do with ARIA. One of the things that I am finding, just even in IE7, I use Facebook quite a lot, and also blog lines, and sometimes those pages change without actually refreshing the whole page.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Using some active components, and one of the things I'm noticing is that Supernova isn't having to refresh the page either. It just, you know, the content will change right under you if you need to do that. So, for example, in blog lines in the left-hand pane, when I click on, you know, say, for example, I've got a blindness news category in my blog lines, and so I go on there and it tells me I've got 148 new items on, you know, Jeff Bishop's blog or whatever. So, you know, if I click on there, straight away that changes to zero right under me, you know, and then I'm able to navigate to the other frame and then start.
Oh, that's great. You know, so the buffer is dynamic.
Yeah.
You don't have to go in and out and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's good. That's good.
That's a good step in the right direction. Can you handle links where the href is missing, or, you know, weird links like on NewsGator and places like that? Or if not, does the scripting language have enough access to the web browsing object model to allow you to make changes in there?
Okay, so the quick answer to that is I don't know, and I think so. So
good answer,
as far as the links go, I would have to look at the specific example. And as far as the scripting goes, I believe that yes, it can talk to the DOM.
Okay, good. So yeah, so it's probably just able to talk to really any com-aware, you know, type application through Lua, I would suppose.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the comment. I mean, the interesting thing was. In our presentation, you know, people are coming up with all kinds of weird and wonderful wacky ideas for scripts, and I think one of the ones they showed at CSUN in the scripting presentation was one of our support engineers had written the script that opened the COM interface to Windows Media Player, pulled out the playlist, then opened the COM interface to Excel, and put in the playlist into an Excel spreadsheet with, you know, how many times you played each track and the running time for each track, and, you know, just as a kind of a proof of concept, really. Really. How you would want to do that, I'm not sure, but...
Very interesting. Okay, now you had another announcement at CSUN 2.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah, Easy Converter 3. So we were talking a little bit earlier about flying and about information being available in an accessible format, not just Braille, but, I mean, if somebody's low vision, then presumably they would need that information in large print, or you know, wouldn't be great if you could get it in DAISY. So last year, Dolphin introduced Easy Converter, and this is really aimed at institutions and organizations who are looking for a tool to really make the production of alternative format materials really straightforward. So you can take a range of input formats, PDFs, Word, you might be something that you scan in, input formats that are not always accessible, and the PDF, by the way, can be a PDF that's just an image, and we can perform OCR on that. Or if there is some text available, then obviously we'll, you know, pipe that straight in. You then have an intermediary stage where you're able to edit the content, because clearly no automated transcription is perfect. You do need some human intervention. But generally speaking, it's pretty good. And then you can fire that out to a range of output formats. So you've got, of course, plain text, but also we can reformat for large print. So this isn't just increasing the font size, but actually reformatting the content. So, you know, it flows around the images. You can set up rules for how you want to handle images. Do you want them in line? Do you want them justified as they were in the original text? How do you want the text to flow around those? Also preserving the original page numbering, because of course when you convert to large print or Braille, you're using a different number of pages, so you need to keep the original page number as a reference, and then of course the new large print or Braille page number. And you can also output to MP3 and to DAISY as well, the new digital talking book standard. So Easy Converter really simplifies that process. And so with version 3, we've introduced our own Braille translator. In the past, we used whatever Braille translator you happen to have on your system. You don't have to have another third-party Braille translator on your system. If you do, then that's great. If you want to use, you know, Duxbury or one of those guys, then that's still available. But we have our own Braille translator, and we would urge you to give it a go, because we're quite proud of it, and the quality of the Braille that's coming out of there. And as I say, there are all sorts of settings in there for formatting and for preserving page numbering and for dealing with things in the original document. And one of the things you can do in Word is you can tell Word what language you're writing in a specific block of text, and Easy Converter is able to see if you change that. So if you had part of the document in English, in US English, and then perhaps maybe you went to Spanish for part of the document, so you'd be able to produce something like the thing you were talking about, Jeff. You know, you said you got that book with the safety card instructions in multiple languages.
Yeah, exactly.
So if the original Yeah, so if the original Word document was marked up correctly and you put that through Easy Converter, it would use the correct Braille code for each of the languages in the original document.
Oh, nice.
Very interesting. Wow, I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing that quite yet. That's interesting.
Hmm.
Very good.
So there are 16 Braille profiles in Easy Converter, and I'm sure there'll be more added in the future. Of course, all the popular European languages. We're now also in Easy Converter supporting full duplex scanners. So, if you need to turn a book around, you can just hack off the edge of a book and then just feed the paper in, and it'll scan both sides of the paper, and and away it goes. And the process is as automatic as we can make it. As I say, no automated transcription is perfect. You do need a human being, as a bit of a sanity check. In transcription work, but we would urge institutions or organisations that do have a range of transcription needs, where Easy Converter really comes into its own, is if you don't know what format you're going to need to produce, you can do that from a single tool. And what we're hearing from users is that people are putting multiple formats onto a CD. So you could get a CD potentially with DAISY, Braille, large print, text, whatever formats you require on there, all on a single disk.
That's great. That's really great. Now, I know you're targeting this for organizations, but are you seeing this as an end user product at all? I mean, is this something that is priced?
Not really. Not really aimed at end users. I think what you find, Jeff, is for end users, they tend to want to produce one format. You're a Braille reader, so you want to produce Braille, so you want a Braille translator. Or maybe you're somebody who likes DAISY, so if it was DAISY that you wanted, then I would direct you toward Easy Producer, which is a toolbar for Word, and you can turn a Word document into a DAISY book using a TTS, and you can do that pretty quickly. So you tend to find that individuals have individual requirements. Where Easy Converter really comes into its own is that kind of multi functionality that it offers.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's great. Any other exciting things happening over there at Dolphin?
Well, the mobile products I haven't mentioned, and the plan with the mobile products is obviously to continue to support people who are using those and to maintain those. So we're not announcing a major update there, but there will be in due course a free update to the mobile products for existing users, and that is to improve support for some of the newer Windows mobile devices.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. Microsoft just announced Windows Mobile 6.1. And of course, 6 has been out for a while. And for those that are not familiar, what do your mobile products support currently? As far as
types of phones, Smart HAL is our screen reader for smartphones. So I think we talked about this last time I was on. I'm sure it's probably still there in the archive. But Windows Mobile 5 for smartphones and Windows Mobile 6 Standard are the operating systems supported by Smart HAL, and it's really intended to be straightforward screen reader for mobile phones that provides familiar hotkeys, familiar TTS in the Eloquence TTS, and of course the ability to move your license between devices if you need to do that. Pocket HAL is a more complex product. It's really designed more for the for a kind of a professional person, somebody who needs to be able to take notes and work with documents on the move, and that's really aimed at the PDA side of things, and there is a free update due for Pocket HAL to improve support for the newer Windows Mobile 6 devices.
Good. Okay. So now, should anybody worry about the type of phone that they pick up, for example, like a Blackjack or a Q or anything like that? Right now, if you go to an AT&T store or anything like that, or should there be any concern about any of the phones that are currently on the market with your software?
Well, with any mobile phone screen reader, generally it's good practice to go to the to the website of the software manufacturer and check what devices are on the supported devices list before you, you know, you kind of rush out and buy something. One of the things we quite often hear from people is that they found a device and it worked really well and it wasn't on our supported devices list. I mean, devices, of course, are being released all the time. You know, it's difficult for anyone to, you know, if you only make mobile phone software, then maybe you can keep on top of every single phone that's released every single day of the week. You know, as you just heard, Dolphin, you know, do a lot more than the mobile phone software. So we reckon we've got pretty much the main devices now on the compatibility list. But hey, it's not perfect. And if you guys find, you know, phones that it works with that we haven't listed, then do let us know. But certainly the devices that are listed there are ones that we have tested and known to work.
Well, none of the players are. I mean, Tox or you know, Code Factory, they all have, you know, phones that they do or don't work with. So you're not alone in that space. That's for sure. Okay, great. So now, are you going to be at ACB, the ACB convention this summer?
Oh, Jeff, we're going to be everywhere.
they got you traveling again, back. Do they?
Yeah. what can I tell you? May, we're going to be at Sight City in Germany, which is big, big European show. Then at the start of July, I believe it's the first week in July, we're going to be at NFB, and then ACBC the second week in July, I hope. Because I've booked my flight.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, it is. They're different weeks this year.
Yeah, well, which is great because I think we're all a little bit stretched, you know, when you got to go to both, of course. So we're really looking forward to NFB and ACB at the start of July, and I'm hoping to be able to catch up with yourselves. Will you be at ACB, Jeff?
Not this year. I got a lot going on at work.
Likewise.
Hold on 1 second. We have a call. Daryl, why don't you take that, and I'll be right back.
Certainly. Okay, yeah, so I don't think either one of us will be making the blindness conventions. So after that, it's Sight Village, right?
In the UK, yeah, absolutely. It's literally get back and, you know, do some washing and then go up to Birmingham,
right,
in the UK for Sight Village. So, definitely be at all of those shows in the summer. So, you know, do come along and say hello. And if you haven't tried our products previously, of course, there'll be an opportunity to do that. And you can pick up some literature and free demos. And I should mention, actually, about the demos that Dolphin's screen reader and screen magnifier and, of course, our single product screen reader magnifier, Supernova, if you install the demo and you try it for 30 days, and if you decide you want to keep it, you like it, you have a couple of options. You can order a full boxed copy if you so desire, or you can call us up and get an unlock code, and you put the unlock code into your demo, and that unlocks it to become a full product. So you don't have to reinstall anything, or, you know, be concerned about whether or not you're going to lose your settings that you spent 30 days configuring. You just put the unlock code in there, and you have a full-blown version of the screen access software on your PC.
So, is Dolphin planning on any sort of program like such as the one GW Micro offers with their lease-to-own program, or any sort of other related programs to try to reduce the impact of the cost of your technology on consumers?
Okay, well, I should say we think that HAL at 795 is reasonably competitive, and the upgrade, major version upgrade is 170. So we think that the pricing initially does offer good value. I mean, you've heard that, you know, the what's new in version 9, you've got scripting and IE and improvements in Office 2007 and so on. There is quite a lot of value there already. Obviously, the cost of assistive technology is a concern to everybody, and obviously we try and keep those prices down and try and keep them, you know, affordable for people. The other point to make, I think, is that in the US, if you decide to go for the pen edition of the Dolphin software. So this is the full Dolphin software running on a USB thumb drive. So, you know, it's not just replacement for a CD. It doesn't just install software onto your PC. It actually carries the software on the drive with all your settings, and you plug that in. If you go for that option, we do also give you a second license, a second CD license that you're able to install on a machine at home. So it might be that you have a Dolphin product on a machine at home, and then you can have the USB key that you can take out and about with you. So effectively, you're getting two licenses for the price of one. And then, you know, as far as things like lease to own, you know, that is constantly under review. Okay,
right. Good. And with the Dolphin pin, the video intercept driver is still required. Is that correct?
The video intercept driver is recommended for best performance and to build the off-screen model so that you can have things like physical navigation around the screen. However, you can run the software without the video interceptor. I kind of think of it as almost like, you know, Narrator on steroids, basically. So you're getting all the, you know, all the TTS and verbosity settings and things, but you do lose some of the, you know, the information about where things are physically on the screen. So you can at a push run it without the interceptor, but of course we would recommend, in order to correctly build and populate the off-screen model, that you do install the interceptor.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, Dave, we want to thank you very, very much for coming on tonight, and especially the wee hours of the morning there for you. And
I think my milkman will be here soon.
Boy, I hope they're not going to make you come in at 8 in the morning, huh?
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. We'll see what happens when the alarm goes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, busy week this week. We've got all sorts of things going on in the office, and the routine suited me really well. Great to see the Dolphin products really, really coming along now, and hopefully I'm able to bring some usability to the table at Dolphin, and ensure that these products are really delivering independence for us as users, and providing really credible alternative. And on behalf of everyone at Dolphin, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to come on the program, and it's good to speak to you both, Daryl and Jeff, and of course everyone out there in Main Menu Land. And hopefully we'll be speaking to you guys again very soon. I'm sure I'll run into a couple of the ACB Radio volunteers at the ACB convention, I guess.
Oh yeah, well, there's work already going on. It's underway, getting all the planning ready for interactive coverage for the convention. So there you go.
Excellent, good stuff. And if we don't see you this summer, hopefully we'll see you at one of the shows, maybe in 2009.
Yeah, I definitely am going to try to be at CSUN next year for sure. So we'll definitely have to connect. Why don't you go ahead and give us all your contact information? How can people get a hold of you?
Yes. Okay. Well, what I will do, because depending on where you are, we'll determine which contact information you need, because we have quite an extensive dealer network in, about 40 countries, I think it is. I'm going to direct you to the website, because I'm going to make the assumption everybody listening to this has got some form of access to the internet. So if you go along to yourdolphin.com, yourdolphin.com, that's yourdolphin.com, from there you can contact your local Dolphin distributor, including calling Dolphin toll-free in the US. And you're also able, from the yourdolphin.com website, to download a free 30-day demonstration version of any of the products we've been talking about.
Okay, great. Thanks again, Dave.
And if I might, Jeff, if people do want to contact me directly, am I okay to have people contact yourselves, and then you can forward that along?
Sure, of course. That's right. They can email me.
I get an enormous amount of mail, and I need to kind of keep some filters on it. So if that's okay with you guys.
No, we do that every week. So for vendors, so that's not a problem. You can email us at main. You can email us, and thanks for letting us do that now, because that will save time for later. mainmenu@acbradio.org, mainmenu@acbradio.org, and if you have questions for Dave or or anyone at Dauphin, shoot us an email. We'll get it forwarded on and make sure that we get an answer for you and get it back to you.
Yeah. Oh, of course, as I say, if you need to come to us directly, just come to yourdolphin.com. And there's a toll-free number there in the US and an email and the web form and everything. I don't think we have Twitter on there yet. But
yeah. Well, that's coming, you know. I'm sure, right?
Yeah. Well, you're on Facebook, so people, you know, be careful. People might find you.
I think some of them already have.
I bet they have. Thank goodness for having to accept them, huh? All right. Well, Dave, again, thank you very, very much for coming on tonight. We really do appreciate it, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, you guys take care, and it's always good to speak to you, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again very soon.
All right, take care.
Bye
for now. Bye for now. Next week on Main Menu, we're going to be running some pre-recorded presentations from CSUN, and that should wrap up our coverage. I think we're going to be able to do 2 hours next week, Daryl.
I think so, and one of those is going to be the optical character recognition product out of Italy. So stay tuned.
Yeah,
to
that's exciting stuff.
Very impressive demonstration Marlena did with the product, with Marco from Italy and the Sci Recognizer product.
We'll hear from Levelstar, a little bit from GW Micro.
And Bookshare.
And a little bit about the Ultra Cane and all kinds of fun stuff. So we... that's what we'll be having for you on next week, and then we'll be back live in about 2 weeks. And we're both going to be away doing things next week, so we'll definitely have new and exciting content for you. Well, good night, Daryl. Thanks for being here. And
good night, everybody.
And we'll talk to everybody in a couple weeks. Good night, everybody, and stay tuned next week for great Main Menu content. Good night.
Contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live. Then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.